Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm recording today with our Chair, Emmanuel Frabert. We're recording this podcast following our first board week here in Frankfurt. And as it's our first podcast of the year, we thought we'd share our preliminary insights into some of the activities and milestones that we've got planned for 2026, including advancing the use of our standards around the world, how we are working to continue with our support for those implementing IFRSS 1 and IFRSS 2, our work to develop an exposure draft on nature, and also, as usual, we will give you an overview of what we've discussed here at our board week and talk a little bit about our recent activities. So let's get started, Emmanuel, with how and where you see momentum building for the use of our standards in 2026.
Thank you, Sue, and welcome everyone to the monthly Dog and Pony Show of the ISSB. Welcome also to all of you in this new year, 2026, and indeed, Sue, it's a good moment to just take stock of where we are in the adoption of our standards. As the ISSB has just turned 4 years old and our standards will turn later this year, 3 years. So we already have 40 jurisdictions that are on the journey to adopt or otherwise use the standards. In 19 of these jurisdictions, entities are already subject to disclosure requirements, with entities in 12 of the 19, ranging from Australia to Malaysia, Mexico, Zambia, that are filing their reports this year, and entities in the other 7 jurisdictions, such as Chile, Qatar, the way that are busy collecting data to file their reports next year. So a lot of activities on the ground, and we can hear more and more from companies how they are part of this lively reporting efforts that has started and or is starting right now. Since our last podcast, China has issued its climate standard, which is designed to build on ISSB standards and to deliver functionally aligned outcomes to those resulting from the application of the ISSB standard. So it's an important news given the size and impact of the Chinese economy. The capital markets are seeing, I think, increasingly the value in ISSB standards. They're being adopted for a range of reasons. And I think last year was, an additional year for us that allowed to understand how those reasons include, for instance, helping investors pricing in risks and opportunities that are beyond balance sheets. The facilitation of access to capital, the encouragement of foreign direct investments, and also sometimes trade facilitation by using the same language through trade partnerships and commercial relationships. We also see increasingly in conversations that we're having with jurisdictions that it's all about building resilient economies, how to rebuild or build further competitive advantages for macroeconomies, for microeconomies and businesses in a changing world and environment, and ensuring that those competitive advantages will still be there or will be transformed, and our standards are bringing, by the time horizons we're looking at, by the value chain horizons we're opening, very critical information, material information, to assess the resilience or the lack thereof, and therefore the investments needed or the change needed in strategies for corporates and macroeconomics to evolve. So a key aspect of our work this year will be to continue to support jurisdictions on their journey to use ISSB standards. We're keen to see, of course, the widespread adoption, but I would say probably even more importantly now, high quality adoption and application of the standards. So for that, particularly when I think about our engagement with regulators around the world, our team will be working with and through partners to help jurisdictions and their growing number, providing training, guides, and tools as jurisdictions develop their rationales and they assess their readiness and develop their roadmaps to adopt or otherwise use the ISSB standards. We will continue to have multilateral development banks play a key role in supporting the use of ISSB standards. And specifically, we are establishing this week an implementation advisors program for independent advisors who are or may be engaged in supporting jurisdictions in their adoption or other use of ISSB standards. And as this is just coming this week, let me just say quickly that this implementation advisors program is designed to first enhance the independent advisors' familiarity with the ISSB standards and the tools and materials that are made available already by us to support regulators. Second, enable implementation partners and authorities to identify advisors with relevant experience. And third, further detailed via our website with application that will open until the 20th of February. Speaking about adoption, I want to also say, having taken stock of where we were at the end of last year, where we are early this year, there is another critical initiative that's going to be a vital component of our adoption work for this year, which is the concept of passporting. What does ISSB passporting actually means? It's a mechanism that can be introduced by a regulator in a jurisdiction to grant the option for foreign private issuers and subsidiaries of foreign entities to use ISSB standards as issued by the ISSB to comply with local sustainability requirements rather than using those local standards that are using or are aligned with the ISSB standards. So passporting provisions can be introduced by a regulator while still using, of course, its domestic requirements for domestic entities, and though that are not subsidiaries or foreign entities, which often, of course, are the vast majority of reporters. And you can obviously think immediately about the benefit for the facilitation of trade and foreign direct investment and capital access, because it would mean for an international company that it could actually use the ISSB standards as issued by ISSB as the basis for its overall reporting system in its ERP and IT and reporting internal systems, using that for any subsidiary that would be residing in a country or jurisdiction that has adopted the passporting of ISSB. So you can see how it would reduce the work and the burden for reporters, but also facilitate, therefore, their access and willingness to trade with and to establish and run operations in any particular jurisdiction. This work will be facilitated through our expanded jurisdiction adopters working group that will be now bringing together the 40 jurisdictions that are adopted as a convening platform, which is kicking off this year and actually later in this quarter. And just to finish on that, we also won't neglect supporting voluntary use of the standards. There are jurisdictions where we recognize that for now ISSB standards won't be mandated, but it's very clear that companies could actually use ISSB as passport in those jurisdictions. For other countries than their home countries, but they could also, be wanting to compete for investment with peers that are using the standards, which will also be supported through our engagement programs. So with that, I think probably, Sue, it provides a good opportunity to seg into our work to how we support the implementation of IFRS S1 and S2, which we know is a priority for us.
Yes, it surely is, with all these jurisdictions and companies starting to use the standards. This is a key focus for us. So we are particularly interested in understanding application questions and challenges out there in the market, which is why we established our transition implementation group, which means that people can submit questions through our website. We've also been listening to questions that we hear in the market and use that as a basis for developing educational materials. We've done a lot on that front, including a lot last year. So since we've issued the standards, we've now developed around 15 different educational sets of materials covering different aspects of our requirements. And we are still planning to do a little bit more here, including on topics such as scenario analysis. So have a look at our website and our Knowledge Hub to see those materials. And we're also continuing our work to enhance our SASB standards. Thank you, everybody who's listening, who sent us a letter last year in response to our first exposure draft on the first set of prioritised industries. We're working through that feedback at the moment, and we'll start discussing it in the next few months at the board meetings. And we will be looking ahead to the exposure draft on the next prioritised industries, and also what we'll do in the next phase, the second phase of enhancements as well. Because, of course, the SASB standards are a really useful resource for those using S1 and S2. So this enhancement work is very much part of our work to support implementation. We're also still working hard to make sure that the market's ready and has the understanding and knowledge to use our standards. So we continue to work on building capacity for our companies preparing information, for regulators and for others using our standards, with training programs, including working with partners and also with materials that are available online, e-learning materials, and also our FSA credential program. So for those of you listening who want to learn more, look out for those. And of course, we have a digital taxonomy to facilitate the provision of information in a digital form for those using our standards. Another really important piece of work that we're doing, given that we rely on and require the use of the GHG protocol for those reporting on emissions using our S2 climate standard, is working very closely with the GHG protocol as they're working to enhance their standards to really make sure that the information required is useful for capital markets. So that's also a key part of our work. So adoption and implementation is very much our primary technical focus. And on that front, one of the things that we talked about actually at our board meeting this week was the work of our TIG. We discussed the papers that were brought to our TIG meeting in November last year. And I really recommend those of you using our standards to take a look at those. There were some interesting questions, including particularly about how to calculate greenhouse gas emissions when you've got intra-group transactions, and how to disclose information about your category, your scope 3 information using IFRS S2. So have a look at the TIG papers and the TIG meeting summary. They're really useful educational resources. And if you'd like to hear more about the TIG and our implementation work more generally, we've got an implementation insights podcast that we issued earlier this month that gives you a good summary, I think, of our materials and work to support the implementation of our standards. Now, looking at our board week this week here in Frankfurt, the kickoff for 2026, in addition to discussing that summary from the TIG meeting of November, we had a discussion about our nature project, which was great. And we actually voted on two questions that we were asked by the staff to help them really set the scene for how we approach our work to develop incremental disclosure requirements for those providing information about nature-related risks and opportunities when they're using our standards. So what did we vote on? The first thing we voted on is what scope are we going to be thinking about? So when we're talking about nature-related risks and opportunities, which nature-related risks and opportunities do we mean? And the board voted to include consideration of material information across all nature-related risks and opportunities, rather than saying that we're going to develop requirements just for, say, water. So we'll consider all nature-related risks and opportunities, which is consistent with what the TNFD has done. Now, when I say that, don't be scared. We are looking at all nature-related risks and opportunities, but remember, ultimately, when you read ISSB standards and apply them, at the end of the day, you only need to provide information which is material for investors, given your particular circumstances, and so you'd be looking at nature-related risks and opportunities that could reasonably be expected to affect your prospects. And also, several board members emphasized an important point. We're looking at all nature-related risks and opportunities, but when it comes to developing particular disclosures, that doesn't mean we're going to ask for disclosures on all of them. It just means that they're all within the scope of what we're considering. So that was a first decision, which which nature items would we look at? The second decision was sort of what's about our assumption in terms of what a company using these new materials that we produce on nature is already reporting on. And our working assumption would be that the company is already applying IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. So it means that we are building on IFRS S1 and S2, including the information that might be provided about climate that is nature related, so we don't need to repeat the things that are in those standards. So for example, S1 already says provide material information. So there's already a basis for the application of nature-related reporting because IFRS S1 says provide material information on all of your important sustainability-related risks and opportunities. And we are going to make sure that everything that we do is really complementary to what's there in S1 and S2. So do we need extra guidance, for example, to make sure people understand what a nature-related risk or opportunity is, how it can give rise to risks and opportunities, and are there particular disclosures that we want to add or emphasize? For those of you interested in the project, I really recommend that you read the board paper and probably even listen to the board meeting. It's only 2 hours and it's a good discussion. We talked about some of the areas that we think that we're going to look at for potential new requirements or content. So for example, we talked about the importance of information about geographical location-specific information. In contrast, we said that probably the needs of investors would already be met on strategy and governance given what we already have in S1. And we talked about what we might do on metrics, more to come on that front, but the staff were have indicated that we'll probably do a modest amount of work on metrics in the near term, subject to discussing that in more detail. The next step, so the next papers that we expect to see, hopefully at the February meeting, will be bringing forward the definitions that we will use. So what are the definitions that we need? For example, what is nature? What's a nature-related risk? What's a nature-related opportunity? And that's really important as a first step so that we are understanding, we have a common understanding of the scope of what we're discussing as a board. And also because for globally comparable information to be provided about nature-related risks and opportunities, you need a common understanding of what that term means. So that's where we will start our discussions in February, and we will be looking to draw on the TNFD's work in this field to the extent that that is consistent with the objectives and the remit of the ISSB. Before I hand over to Emmanuel, I think the last thing I'd say is that we talked a lot in the board meeting about the importance of being proportionate in terms of the amount of work that we do here or the extent to which we add on additional disclosure requirements here for companies. We want to be really sure that what we're asking for is material information for investors. We're very conscious of the fact that people have got a lot to do already to apply S1 and S2, and that the state of metrics on nature is often more nascent than in other areas. And we have made it clear that we really want to think specifically about whether or not these materials would be mandatory or indeed whether they would be voluntary. So if you want to, or if a jurisdiction wants to have reporting on nature, then it would be available without mandating its use for those, everybody using the ISSB standards. So that's going to be an important part of what we consider as we build out our proposals for this exposure draft. And we're still targeting having an exposure draft out by October. So we need to be pretty focused on this work. Emmanuel, maybe there's something you want to add, but otherwise maybe talking about what you were doing at Davos would be interesting for people.
Thank you, Sue. No, you said it all about our work on nature at this stage, and I would simply double down on what you said about the proportionality. We want to be absolutely clear that this is, you know, first and foremost also a way to better apply IFRS S1 and S2 as opposed to anything grand that we're looking at. Again, as you just said, very conscious of how much work is already going on in the implementation and the application of our existing standards. Yeah, I'd be happy to share a few words about Davos meeting this year. That was right before our board meeting here in Frankfurt. I probably found this Davos session for us as one of the most productive, in the sense that you can feel in the rooms, in the meetings, the dozens of meetings, how much the fact that jurisdictions are now starting to use the standards. And as I said in my introduction, basically, you know, companies all over the world are now reporting in Turkey, in Brazil, in Australia, and in the 20 jurisdictions that I mentioned earlier, is a fact and a reality. So, you know, the reality is hitting the ground now, right now. And so we have very concrete conversations that are both a combination of strategic and technical conversations. But it's not a matter of, you know, understanding the why and, you know, theoretical discussions, academic discussions. It's about really implementation and what is this tool meant to achieve. I had a number of interactions with the insurance sector, reinsurance companies that find more and more risks that cannot be insured. And therefore, what's left over is a risk for the business, which then has potentially, you know, material effect for the portfolio of banks, for the businesses that are lending, for the banks that are lending to that business that has uninsurable risks. So really, you know, financial architecture conversations as well, that included central banks. To those who say that ESG is over and it's all about geopolitics now, I say, I agree. We've never been about ESG. I think the IFRS standards, sustainability standards, have been created to just end ESG as an alphabet soup and a combination of things and, you know, and ratings and numbers and disclosures that are discrete, that are voluntary, that are unverifiable, unreliable in many ways, even though most of the time in good faith. And it's the time seems to be, and certainly at Davos, over when, you know, companies, at least in Davos, and again, have stopped bragging about, you know, everything good that they do for the world, but really thinking hard about the risks and opportunities that they have, and certainly starting with the risks, actually, and then realizing there are also opportunities in how all these changes in the world, in the value chains, in the time horizons, will affect their competitive advantage, and how do their competitors are reacting to that. And if they're reacting better than their competitors, they will attract more capital at a lower price. So this was really, for me, a very clear point that we've never been about ESG, and this, you know, confusion needs to be stopping, and it has to a great degree. Second, it's all about geopolitics, but geopolitics does one thing. It actually accelerates and aggravates those risks and opportunities because it cuts supply chains, it cuts value chains, it cuts strategic options, or open others, by the way, symmetrically. And so the ability for companies to project themselves in an uncertain world and way beyond their own operations when they critically rely on a particular mineral or a particular channel of distribution in a large country, those volatility are creating even more interest in how investors can evaluate the resilience of businesses to these risks and to these opportunities. So I'd say that's been a very realistic Davos for us, which is great because in many ways, this is what our standards are about, which is, you know, and again, ensuring that when we speak about sustainability, we're actually talking about how resilient and sustainable business models are and how investments that are sustaining those are as well. So that was all for me reporting from Davos and Snow there. Was great to be in Frankfurt with the board this week for very productive discussions. Thank you, Sue, for leading us through these conversations this week and for your extensive report about them to our audience now. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate,
review,
and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.